The parent's job as teacher on the road is to just create surface area between your kid and yourself and the world. And by maximizing that surface area, experience and education happens so organically that, you know, it really becomes an opportunity rather than a limitation.
Welcome to DVA with Rolf Potts. Today I talk with Julie Frieder, who, along with her collaborators Annika and Angela, wrote a book called Wonder Year, A Guide to Long-Term Family Travel and World Schooling. I actually met Julie and her co-authors at a Vagabond's Way book event in Colorado last year, which is where I first learned of their book about family vagabonding. Together in this interview, Julie and I talk about her own experiences of traveling by camper van for a year with her husband and grade school-aged son. We talk about how to plan and prepare for your own long-term journey with kids, be it overseas or in your own home country. We talk about how to earn and save money for the endeavor and how to structure your kids' education on the road in a way that enables them to help plan and execute their own learning. Julie actually has 5 copies of her book to give away to Deviate listeners, so if you're interested in traveling with your kids, or if you don't yet have kids but you're curious about how you might one day take them out on the road for a vagabonding journey, email me at deviate@rolfpotts.com, and I'll pass the first 5 replies along to Julie, and she'll send you free copies. Today's interview starts by talking about how Julie defines a family wonder year. Let's listen in. So I guess to kick things off, what is a wonder year? How do you define that? And who's it for?
This book is, as you said, it's long-term family travel and world schooling. And it's really for anyone who has an epic adventure in their heart, but is not sure about how to put it all together, not sure what to do with home, how to get down the road, and certainly for families who are thinking of having kids or already have kids, this book is the soup to nuts guide that can give them really everything they know to start their planning and confidently move forward with that dream. And there's a lot to it. There's information spread everywhere on the web and in a bunch of books and articles. And what this book does is pulls everything together to be a definitive resource that can really support that wanderlust, that travel dream.
I like it that you say that it's also for people who are thinking of having kids, because I think sometimes there's some people who sort of love travel or dream of travel who might, you know, put off having kids because they feel like kids can be an impediment. But it feels like you're sort of making an argument for the fact that kids can enhance a journey.
And it might sound a little like too sugar-coated, but it's really true. The experience of traveling with children is layers upon layers of discovery and enjoyment. And it's not always perfect. We can talk about that too. They might, when they're older teenagers, they might push back. But what they gain from it, the openness and the curiosity and the creativity, It's lessons that start then are seeded and are evident over their entire life. So it is truly different traveling with kids. It's a whole other set of concerns and problems and planning, but the experience is profoundly, it's just wonderful. It was the best year of my life and the best year of my husband's life and our son's life, for sure, the year that we spent together on the road.
Well, I want to dig into the nuts and bolts of long-term family travel, but first tell me a little bit about your backstory. It sounds like you and your husband and your kid had a life-changing journey. So tell us a little bit about that and what it was like for you and why you decided to do it.
We're from Colorado and love the outdoors. I'm a sustainability professional. My husband's a hydrogeologist. Our kid was in public school. And like by third grade, this is a kid who loved things that go. He biked and he kayaked and he built things and he had a lawn business. And it just felt like when he was kind of engaging with the world around him, he sort of was bright, but in school, it seemed like he wasn't all together, kind of growing as much as I knew was possible. And so we both Charlie and I love travel and have a ton of experience traveling, and said, you know, we kind of dreamed up the idea of hiking one day and just moved toward it. So for fourth grade, we took Johnny out of school and we bought a small camper van, and we traveled for 13 months and, got into the world. We spent most of our days and nights outside, and really discovered that learning in the world together was a great way for us to be. We mostly stayed in the U.S. We did go over to Italy and Hungary for 5 weeks to kind of explore our family roots. Found that he really excelled in his learning, both the kinds of applied lessons that we were able to create by just visiting a river or learning how to bake bread because we met a baker in Bend, Oregon. Just that applied experiential component was really a great way to do fourth grade. When we got back, he slid right into fifth grade, really without me missing a beat. And, to this day, he kind of, one of our mantras for the year was follow your bliss. So, the thinking is get exposed to a lot of stuff, see what is really interesting and fascinating to you, and then learn about it, go deep in it, go deep in that inquiry. And so today that's sort of set him up to be a lifelong learner, and feel really satisfied that discovery came from this year when we didn't have an artificial schedule setting a cadence of learning. We didn't have to be anywhere. We could be right where we were and explore and notice and observe and wonder and take the time to follow that curiosity. And so that's the power of world schooling and having, longer than a vacation, being out for a longer amount of time changes that relationship with time.
Yeah. A couple of things I grabbed onto, that just the idea that I think sometimes there's some anxiety that it would be irresponsible to take your kid out of school, but my parents are teachers, they gave their whole careers to teach to schools. But a lot of the challenge was getting kids who were smart but not good students engaged. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like it's actually a fantastic educational environment. And I often give advice to young people to maybe travel, if not a gap year, travel in some form before your formal education, because then you can find out what your bliss is. You can find out what you're interested in, what you're good at. And that actually going into higher education with a sense for what you love is cool and good and useful, but actually getting a sense for the possibility of the world when you're a fourth grader, why not start then? So I love the idea of this.
Well, I was gonna say, I heard just the other day, there's an amazing writer, author, Temple Grandin, but she talks about the most important thing is exposure. No matter what kind of a learner a child is, a visual learner, one who prefers to just read, obviously everyone's a mix of all of those modalities, but that one of the best things we can do is expose them, exactly as you're saying, to all different kinds of things, whatever it is, art, architecture, music, food, agriculture, animals, whatever it is, that if we can expose them to that, then they can start to discover what it is that they love and what they want to pursue, and then they can start to piece it together. And travel, there's no better way. There's no bigger menu of things to be exposed to than through travel. And it changes, and every place you go, there's a different menu. And I say, I was kind of nervous. I'm not a teacher. I didn't know exactly what we were getting into. I kind of did my homework and knew what would have been required. All the school districts, they publish the standards. A great thing to do is look at a report card, and that gives parents a clue of, what types of things might my kid be expected to know. And, so there's all kinds of ways to get a little more confident with what you're doing and to feel like you're not being irresponsible. In fact, when you work through that fear of, oh my gosh, is my kid going to be missing out? Or, oh my gosh, will they not be double advanced in math? Or are they going to miss out on sports or extra? Once you can work through that, and there's ways to do that, and there's a lot of people out in the world today traveling as a family, and travelers who make that decision are not alone. So there is a wonderful community. Once you work through that fear and move into it, things just open up and the possibilities, it, like you said, the educational piece becomes so rich that there's really the opposite becomes true. All of the fear and the worry about doing something wrong flips 180 degrees and you realize you've made this extraordinarily smart decision about your kid's education. I say that it's really the parent's job as teacher on the road is to just create surface area between your kid and yourself and the world. And by maximizing that surface area, experience and education happens so organically that, you know, it really becomes an opportunity rather than a limitation.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of this guy, this Canadian guy that I worked with in Korea. He was telling a story about him as a teenager and how frustrated he was in learning language. He studied Spanish in his textbooks and it was just boring to him. But then when he went to Ecuador and realized he could use it to flirt with other teenagers, then suddenly language was exciting, right? And it feels like that can be a metaphor for so many kinds of learning. Once you see a place, it's one thing to read about, you know, the Sistine Chapel or Machu Picchu. And it's another thing to walk through that and think about it in terms of architecture and what it may have taken to build. So let's walk through, in much in the manner of your book, the topics that you bring up that sort of take us from inspiration to coming home. And so I'm curious, you know, for people who might be turning family travel over inside their own heads, what's the argument for why to do it and why as a family to do it? And then how do you get the ball rolling for something like this?
One of the people we interviewed a lot of current and past travelers for this book. And, one of the people we interviewed, Allie, she said, you know, I was a traveler way before I was a mom. And so the reason to do it is because we're travelers and because we love to get out in the world and because we can, and because the travel industry is very different today than it was. The opportunity for discovery and for being courageous and doing new and bold things, you know, you're not going to be the first family that you're not going to have like the first ascent of some peak because they've all been bagged already, but you'll be the family that has a new connection with a place and meets some amazing family and goes over for dinner. And your kids are going to have new friends for life, and there'll be stories and memories and experiences that will be so enriching that your kid will have this fertile layer and you will share that with them forever. And so the reason to do it is because all the reasons you love travel, and then multiply it by two. And I do want to say that for many families who maybe have special needs children, or who have a neurodiverse child, or who have anyone with that would not have been, you know, the face of travel a decade ago, the industry is changing. You know, this book is structured, like you said, Rolf, it kind of walks you through the biggest questions and the biggest challenges. And so right now we're starting at the beginning, which is, can I do it? And yes, you can. And start early planning and saving. And, you know, there's a bunch of guidance in this book about closing up home and sort of we figured it all out. There's three authors. We don't want everyone. We think it's kind of silly for everyone to have to figure it out on their own. So we kind of pulled the best of what we knew and researched and have learned and put it into the book. So closing up home and starting to think about funding, you know, that happens early on.
A couple real basic questions for people who might not be sure yet. Any tricks for thinking about how long to take Like, is a year a good benchmark, or does it not really matter? And then, you sounds like your big journey was USA based. My first vagabonding journey was USA based, but then there's also abroad. So how do you go about choosing how long to go and whether or not to do it in your own country or to take it overseas?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And, there's really no answer to how long. You know, what our book is geared toward is everything that you need to know. If it's, you know, if you're going on a vacation, yeah, you'll find some interesting and helpful things in this book, but that's a different kind of travel than, you know, being on the road for longer than pulling up stakes and hitting the road for longer than, say, a 2-week vacation. So, you know, we call it, our book is called Wonder Year, and we define that as long-term travel plus world schooling. And we go on to say there's no formula. It's a season of discovery. And it might be a summer. It might be a semester. It might be a family gap year. It might be a month every summer for 5 years in a row. And what I want to encourage people is to allow yourself to dream and go there and think about, you know, are there places that I've wanted to go, or we've wanted to go, or that have significance for a family? And, you know, maybe if you need to dip a toe in first and go for a month, go for 3 weeks. You know, I was just at the Denver Travel Show, and there were people, you know, it was great talking to people for 2 days straight and just all kinds of ideas. And we met this family with 3 kids exactly in the situation. They're like, we really want to do this. We really don't know how. What do you think if we go for 2 weeks? And I'm like, heck yeah, that's like a perfect way to start and see what it feels like to just be in motion, to maybe not have every day planned. Rolf, you talk a lot about that. You know, part of it is getting a couple anchor points and then allowing some spontaneity and serendipity to color that space and that time. And I'm not an expert on mental health, so I want to be really clear about that, but I am an expert on family travel, and I know that family travel is good for mental health. I know that getting off of a telephone and stepping away from technology and getting out from the burden of being overstructured is really good for families and really good for kids. And travel is a way to support that mental health, to support the emotional intelligence, and to support a different kind of risk-taking as a family with the support of each other. And all of those kinds of benefits, they might not be immediately evident. It might not be like why you say, oh, hey, we should go do this for those reasons. But I just want to give you a little heads up that there's a lot more to it. When families can be looking and experiencing something, seeing awe side by side, the experience of awe as a family, that's good. It's cool at the moment. It's also good for your brain. And so there's so much benefit to the experience of travel, being in motion as a family, that I hope that serves as inspiration for people. If there's, there was a great article by Florence Williams in Outside Magazine. She's just a great science journalist, you know, all about awe. And again, travel is one of those things. Like when you're in the world, it happens. When you're in the shopping mall, I don't know, maybe you hear an awesome song on the radio, or maybe, you know, maybe there is something awesome that happens once in a while. But when you're in the world, having adventures, you know, it's a lot more, it happens a lot more is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, having an alternate to being on your smartphone. And it feels like awe is something that we're always packaged on our smartphones, these amazing, you know, mediated experiences, but actually seeing things in person, you know, places over screens is such a good pretext for anybody to travel. But even more so, you know, give a kid a year where the screen is secondary to seeing new places with their naked eyes. I just love the idea of that. You mentioned this involves pulling up stakes. So using a 1-year journey as a model, or maybe a 1 academic year as a model, or even a semester as a model, what kind of planning and preparation and money questions go into taking that much time off with your family, perhaps when you're settled in a community already? How do you leave a home behind for that period of time?
There's no formula. There is a budget, and a budget should really reflect a family's values. And that can be, you know, the values, I mean, do you want to stay domestic or do you want to go abroad? Do you want to have a camper van or some sort? Do you want to take your home with you, or do you want to just have backpacks? Do you want to go for a certain amount of time, or are you just going to hit the road and kind of wing it and decide? Do you want to do adventure travel or specific excursions? So all of those kind of key desires can be the basis of a budget. And beyond that sort of rough budget, there's some, you know, there's some steps. Start saving today. There's income streams. There are ways to, you know, we rented out our house in Colorado, and it was, you know, a really, it was a privilege for us to be able to do that. And it did generate an income stream that supported most of our travels. You can do long-term or short-term rentals. There's selling assets. You know, one of our co-authors, they pretty much sold everything and just hit the road and were able to kind of figure things out. They didn't know where they were going to land in the end, but they sold a lot of assets. We actually sold a car as well. There's just things, you know, the priority is starting to build for this trip. And so it becomes very deliberate and even part of an early world schooling lesson when kids can start to be involved in that budgeting and the planning as appropriate. You know, parents can decide, but we very much encourage kids to be involved in all appropriate conversations. It's just a really important part of that life lesson that can be extended. Once you're in motion, there's so many ways to lower costs and avoid costs. And what I mean by that is, if you're just on a vacation, you're going to stay somewhere in some accommodation and you come back. But when you've closed up your home, maybe you have an opportunity to do some remote work. Maybe your employer, if you own a business, maybe you keep the business going. Maybe you've taken a sabbatical. You know, the work thing is a very important conversation. But once you're on the road, there are ways to keep costs really low. There's different kinds of transportation. You can take a local bus. You can take an overnight train. You can take a lower cost type of transportation that might not be available if you're just on a vacation. With accommodations, there are home swaps. There's house sitting. There's work exchange. There's organizations like Workaway. There's WOOFing, which is Worldwide Workers on Organic Farms, which we did. I talk about it a lot because it was one of the greatest parts of our trip. We harvested olives in Sicily. We were in Sicily. We harvested olives all morning. We lived for free in a gorgeous Italian villa. And, you know, that kind of opportunity, once you set your vision on, you know, being family travelers, these opportunities come into view, and there are lots of ways to avoid costs. The other things to do are, you've heard the phrase, obviously, slow travel is another way to keep costs down. Some people like to find an inexpensive Airbnb, maybe do some work, some tutoring, be a barista, if you've taken your skills with you, you might be able to find an opportunity to teach or do something for income while you're staying put in a place. When you're slow traveling, you know, think about it. You can go to the grocery store. You can cook at home. You can go to the local market. There's, you know, all kinds of tips and tricks from expat communities. So slow travel allows a much lower budget as well. Off-season travel, you know, not going at the peak season, but maybe going to Paris in November instead of the peak season. Staying open and just being spontaneous, talking to locals and getting tips on free activities. When are museum days free? You know, there's all kinds of tips you can get from locals when you're just kind of out there engaging. There's volunteer and other work exchange. We were not brand ambassadors as much as we volunteered for a nonprofit organization. And all across the country, we did community service and we met super cool people. We did river cleanups. We did some speaking all about local watershed protection and sustainability. And we ended up getting invited to stay at a bunch of different people's homes and kind of bounced around that way. So again, the framing of long-term family travel presents so many opportunities, some that you can plan in advance and others that you can kind of improvise once on the road. But there are lots of ways to keep those costs down and make it more affordable. And of course, we need to say there's plenty of places around the world. And Rolf, you know more about this than I do, but places around the world where, frankly, it's just cheaper to live than in the States. And so, why not go there?
Yeah, as we record this, I was in Thailand last month, and it reminded me of just how much cheaper at every level a beautiful place like Thailand is, that it's just by nature of the fact that it's just the baseline for everything is cheaper. It makes for, allows you to stretch your travels further than in an equally beautiful part of maybe Europe or North America. I like also that you mentioned Willing Workers on Organic Farms. That institution it predates my travel career, which is a pretty long one by a long time. What an institution that is. And so it feels like a lot of the resources that are available to your average vagabonder can sort of be done family style in a way that enhances things for everybody. You mentioned the phrase just sort of involving kids in the planning. So I'm curious to know about things like identifying goals and interests that jibe with your kids, sort of comparing wish lists and bucket lists, sort of finding ways to stretch each other's comfort zones. How about this level of planning with your kid on where to go and what to do?
Part of the joy of the family trip is that it is there is involvement of everyone and it gets shaped. And this is one of the hidden educational rewards of world schooling and family travel is, in our case, and for many, many, many people that we interviewed and have met along the way, for children to feel empowered and to be heard and to have agency is a kind of life lesson that's subtle, but really important. And so that starts with things like, where do you want to go? Let's look at a map. Let's learn about a few places before we decide. Let's make a short list and look at all the reasons. Oh, you know what? Let's make a short list and look at the pros and cons and then make a decision and talk about it. Or even better yet, Johnny or Lorna or whomever, I would like you to pick three places. And how about you make a little presentation and tell us about these places and why you think they would be fantastic for us to go. And so, everything gets built out as an engaging kind of activity. And itinerary planning is so fun to do in that way, to pick wish list destinations, or maybe someone has a keen interest. Maybe someone loves fashion, and wants to be either a textile engineer or a fashion designer. So then, let's find out where lace is made. What about silk? Where does that come from? Or how is cotton? Like, let's kind of pick some places that allow us to explore that interest. And that becomes both a fantastic way to create an itinerary and also a fantastic way to design a curriculum around things that are interesting to the family members. So looking at specific interests or pursuits, asking are we trying to simplify here? Do we want to have a small pack and just go, or do we want to actually have, an accommodation somewhere where we can have some equipment or some gear and kind of do it that way? So all of these values, all of these tensions and choices and trade-offs, they're great ways to involve children and for parents side by side to be planning an itinerary. So we wouldn't, there's a bunch of prompts that I would offer, like start with your family values. What matters? Do you want to learn a second or third or fourth language? Do you want to go study where your great, great grandparents came from? And then kind of work through what are some destinations And, you know, many of the things we've been talking about, the key to planning, of course, is to not overplan. And the key to being a long-term family traveler is that just, I promise you, you will never be disappointed if you leave space for not knowing, plan for the unplanned, and you don't need to know every single day. And if you do, you're probably going to miss out on something that is way cooler and way more interesting and satisfying than you knew about. So that's one of those key lessons, is to really, you know, and most family travelers, us included, we started off with a lot more structure, a lot more in, you know, planned days, and then very, very quickly just loosened things up and got a lot more spontaneous.
So one word that you've dropped a lot is world schooling. Your book also alludes to things like road schooling and unschooling and game schooling. So tell us a little bit about what it is like to educate a child or more than one child on the road, what the nuts and bolts are, how that sort of plays into the rhythm of a given travel week. For people who've never heard of it, and I've heard of it, but I don't know a lot of the nuts and bolts. So I'm curious myself about how one goes about designing, say, an academic year or semester on the road with their kids.
Sure. World schooling is simply defined as learning through direct interaction in the world. And it, by definition, is beyond the four walls of a classroom. It's experiential. There are other words, like you said, road schooling or unschooling. World schooling, we use it pretty broadly here to mean this experiential component of learning during a wonder year, learning while traveling with the family. The logistics are pretty straightforward. Every state in the U.S. has a law that will determine what kind of requirements would exist for homeschooling. And so most families who pull their kid out of school for the year would register as a homeschooling family for that period of time that they're not enrolled in school. And there are some states that are really loose and you don't really have to do much, maybe sign a letter that says, yeah, I'm going to teach my kid for the year, and others where there's much more regulatory rigor and you might be required to do some kind of testing or have a portfolio, sign a contract. So it's important to check. There's a website, HDLSA, that.org, Homeschooling Legal Defense Association is the organization, and they keep a complete catalog of all the state laws and everything that's required. So just knowing that every parent has a legal or guardian has a legal right to teach their kid for the year, to pull them out of school. In terms of logistics, you know, how much space are you going to need? Are there certain classes that you're trying to follow directly from the school? There's sort of some fundamental questions that parents would need to ask. And again, most families intend to start out with more structure and then quickly realize that there's just way more fun and way more powerful to learn experientially. But some of those early questions would be, you know, are we going to try to purchase an online curriculum? And there are resources out there where you can buy like the entire fourth grade everything, or you can buy the math curriculum, or you can buy the language, or buy apps to do online school. There's probably a homeschool arrangement with the local school district in many, many districts across the country. Now, on this side of COVID, because we have so much experience with remote school, there's a lot of programs that are set up. So for families that want more structure and feel like they need that structure, there's support from the school districts. There are resources that provide the actual instructional materials, and there's programs that you can buy, you know, to follow along. And then beyond that, There's tutoring, there's online tutoring, there's all kinds of support. That's on the structured side. And that's all well and good. And there's no judgment. On the less structured side is where it gets really interesting. Because here's where the world is a very good teacher. And how are you going to tap into it? And there's ways to follow your itinerary and capitalize on where you'll be. If you're going to the Amazon, maybe it's a great time to study rainforests. If you're going to the Yucatan, maybe it's a great time to study Mayan history. If you're going to Italy, my son said it was a great time to do a comparative analysis of ice cream and gelato. And so every day, twice a day, we did ice cream field work, gelato field work, and he kept a running. He wrote an entire report. He produced bar charts and pie charts, and it was all. It was a great example. I mean, it was a great experience for him and for us. There are ways to follow the curiosity of students. You can create an entire curriculum around their passion. Maybe their interest is monkeys, or maybe their interest is music, and weaving music throughout, going to Vienna, going to study drumming and some of the music greats. It's a theme that allows not just like a linear study or subject specific, but it can be woven through the arts and social sciences of a place through the lens of music. The other way is to just sort of throw it to the wind, follow a more unschooling approach, which is taking cues from nature and following your children's interests and just seeing what happens. Because as we've talked about, so much of the experience of family travel can be educational just by opening up and pausing and noticing, observing, and wondering, that there can be the serendipitous approach. For example, we were just kind of chilling out in Bend, Oregon. We'd done some paddling on the Deschutes River and showering. Johnny was showering off at the outside shower of our rig. And I mentioned this earlier, but a baker, the guy who worked in the local bakery, showed up and introduced himself. And we had this great conversation. Next thing you know, he invited us to come to the bakery. So we spent the night in the parking lot because we could. We woke up at 4 a.m. because we could, and we went into the bakery and we learned from Jacob all about baking and dough and yeast and fermentation, and spent several hours there. And then later in the day, we were really tired, so we took a nap. And that's the kind of serendipity that can be every day. And again, if you're a family who wants more structure, that won't work for you. But ideally, there is some balance, and the world is a very good teacher. There is a huge and growing community of world schoolers. There are Facebook groups today. There are communities and pop-ups around the world where traveling families are finding each other. Some are temporary, others are more permanent, and they offer like 2 weeks or 2 months for teenagers to have this cultural immersion and explore, Mexico. Or families meet in Bansko, Bulgaria in the winter. There's a great world schooling hub there, and families come together and share resources, share ideas. Kids learn side by side, again, experientially in the world. But these Facebook groups are growing. The biggest one has over 62,000 members. And so again, for families who are curious, you don't have to figure it all out on your own. There's these Facebook groups, people put very specific questions and are getting a lot of great information. So there's tons of support to be able to do this.
Yeah, I seem to recall a phrase in your book, something along the lines of parents can be students too. why don't you talk about that?
Lots of parents decide this is the time I'm going to learn a new language, or I've always wanted to learn how to play ukulele, or we're learning how to make cheese in Sicily and the parents are just as involved. And that is so precious for children who ordinarily would be off at school and their parents go off and do their work, either at home or outside of the home, and kind of living these parallel important worlds, but to be learning at the same time and to be able to reflect in the evening over dinner and share the lessons and raise some new questions. And then 2 weeks later to have a memory about it, or 2 years later to recall that time that we were in Bend, Oregon, and we met Jacob the Baker, and how amazing was that? That kind of shared experience is profound, and it for both parents and children. And so, again, the being in motion, every river crossing or time you have to order in a different language and struggle to be understood, and the jokes and the laughing and the shared hilarity of it all, and the learning, that's like one of those superpowers that makes a traveling family become this tumbling, bonded, polished unit.
I love the idea that anyone who can wholeheartedly throw themselves at the wonderful mercy of a trip like this will eventually have their version of a Jacob the Baker moment, because it sounds like that was a special day. And it feels like that's something you can't plan for, but it's what you remember. Like, if you allow yourself, and I think oftentimes the first week of your journey isn't the best time to have a Jacob the Baker moment, although it could be, but over the course of a long haul, you find yourself more given to Jacob the Baker moment. So what characterizes a trip once you have your travel legs? Once you're used to the cadence of the journey, and can it involve things like burnout or homesickness or missing community? And how do you compensate for things like that?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because it's true. I mean, sometimes you just need a break, right? It's not always perfect. And there is burnout, there's homesickness, there's culture shock, there are other bumps and detours, and knowing how to manage through that, it is kind of hard to figure out. You know, some of it, like, especially with kids, they can't just have like a stronger espresso and be okay the next day if they didn't sleep well the night before. And so, you know, they're just a little bit more raw than we are as adults. So kind of paying attention to that and knowing that different foods and different time zones and sleeping in a different place every night, it can take a toll. And so I love your phrase when you say giving yourself permission to settle down. Maybe it's, you know, changing up the plan. Maybe it's going home and visiting the grandparents for a couple of weeks. Maybe it's having them come to visit you for a couple of weeks. We had friends come to visit a lot, which was quite grounding. We circled back home. My husband's mother was aging, and she's still aging, but she's doing great. She turned 94 yesterday.
Wow, happy birthday.
We circled back through to visit her. And those times back home just kind of let us unwind a little bit too. So there's other ways to kind of allow yourself that. If it's someone overseas, my co-authors Annika and Angela, they both had times where it was just they reached a burnout stage and kind of needed some downtime. So sometimes they would just find an inexpensive hotel and literally just go spend the day at the pool, something really familiar. And being able to expect and anticipate that kids are going to have those days and that adults are going to have those days. For the adults, you know, the surprises of being on the road is just how communication and roles and responsibilities evolve as the family becomes travelers. And we found that our communication was really good while we were traveling. It's almost like out of necessity, because you're in a 24-foot rig. There's like, you're kind of always together all the time. Yes, we had bicycles, and yes, I would go for runs, and yes, we had our ways of knowing, like, I need a break, or I need some alone time, or there's all kinds of, you know, important and honest communication, but the practice of communication, and again, involving the kids in that, making decisions together, feeling the discomfort, being out of sorts, and then working through it is one of those life lessons, again, that in our case, I see it in my son. He's an outstanding communicator, and he knows how to tune in and knows that if he's super stressed, he knows what he needs to do to kind of manage that. And a lot of that came through practicing, through being honest in our communication, and kind of knowing that we're in it for the duration. So you kind of got to work through it in the moment.
Yeah, it feels like travel can sort of give you a new language of sorts to communicate with each other, because you need to address so many basic things from day to day that you can't address in a routinized way like you would do at home. Speaking of home, I should probably address coming full circle, coming back home. You call it re-entry in one of your chapters. You also use the phrase soft landing. How can you come full circle from this life-changing, life-expanding experience and come back to what might seem a little bit banal after all of it and reintegrate yourself into a community in a way that is smooth and good for the family and the community they return to?
It's a really good question and a really complicated one, because reentry can be challenging. The experience of being on the road is for sure about having adventures and seeing new places and learning new things, but it changes you. It changes the traveler, and that transformation means coming home, you're different. And so managing that takes a little bit of nuance, and we dedicate a whole chapter to it because we want to give travelers a bit of a heads up that, you know, be easy on yourself. There are things to do to prepare for a softer landing. So maybe, you know, a month or two out, I don't know, maybe make a phone call to the employer, a possible employer, or maybe check in with your neighbors. Or obviously, most people stay in touch with their family. But before you get home, you know, start to nurture some of that ground so that the landing is a little bit softer. And maybe not, you know, don't set yourself up for a really harsh return. You know, we stayed for a few nights in a little cottage at a little park near our town, and it was just a little bit of a transition. I mean, I love the work of Kate Harris and, you know, Lands of Lost Borders, and talking about sort of stepping over thresholds and making changes and everything that goes on when you're switching from, you know, the metaphor of what happens when you go from one place to another, from across a border, and returning is a pretty massive border, but it doesn't have to be, it's good because there's learning and there's intention in that return. And I came back literally with a broken elbow. I had a major wipeout in our 12th month and ended up having surgery, and then came back. I was like immobilized in this brace. So when I came back, I was kind of a head case because I couldn't really do everything I needed to do. And so it made it hard, but it also slowed me way, way, way down, which in the end, I would do it over again exactly the same way, because I was able to savor all that was going on and sort of appreciate that I had changed and grown, and that I'm coming back to this place I love and call home, and that my work would be to hold on to that traveler's mindset And because I was sort of in that brace and a little bit immobilized, it allowed me to really go there, to think about what is it about being on the road and being so alert and attuned and connected to places and to people we met. And how do I keep that mindset and protect it so that being home can have the same kind of intentionality in how we live. And I think traveling as parents, I think travel makes us better parents.
Is there any bit of advice for people who might be on the fence about this thing, who are just beginning to wrap their head around the idea of taking their kids on the road for an extended time?
I encourage you to allow yourself to dream about it, to honor the apprehension and fear, to reside in that uncertainty and know that the choice you make to make it happen is really empowering. And, you know, we're so trained to not be in places where there's uncertainty. And let's face it, you know, uncertainty makes us just smarter and more creative and more confident in choosing the life we want to live. And so, like, wallow in the uncertainty. And then if you want to do it, start saving, involve your kids, and don't be swayed by some of the social media that makes it look so perfect, because that doesn't have to be your trip. Your trip, everyone's trip, will be what they can do. And whether it's 2 weeks or a year or a summer, the act of being in motion as a family and discovering together what it feels like to be travelers is an experience that will set your kids up for openness and curiosity for their entire life. It will give them a new perspective that will help them through high school and through college and through young adulthood. And I know there's a lot of support, a lot of resources, and a growing community of people out there who are choosing their path. And I obviously am super nostalgic and an optimist. I hope I haven't been jaded and one-sided about that it is hard and it can be scary and there may be setbacks. But I'll just say again, it was the best year ever. And when I got back, I wanted to climb up to one of the 14ers in Colorado and shout as loud as I could, go do this. You can do it. And so that's why we wrote Wonder Year, is we want to help people get out there.
This has been Deviate with Rolf Potts. More about everything that was just mentioned can be found in the show notes at rolfpotts.com/deviate. A reminder that Julie is giving away 5 copies of Wonder Year, a guide to long-term family travel and world schooling. So if you're interested in the copy, email me at deviate@rolfpotts.com and I'll send the first 5 replies her way. This episode was produced by Cedar Van Tassel, who also does the theme music. Thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in for future episodes of Deviate with Rolf Potts.